Hello and welcome to Does This Make Me a Bad Person? A deep dive into the world of horror, true crime, paranormal, cryptids, and all other miscellaneous weird shit. I'm Rachel.
I'm Michaela.
Hi.
Hey. How's it going?
You know what? It's been a great day today.
Yeah. I mean, mine was pretty great. I did take a short nap, which is nice. Just unheard of in my life right now.
Yeah.
So, magic. Why was yours so great?
John took a half day off, which is nice. We got time to hang out and do errands and stuff. And you know how I love a disc replay.
You went to disc replay?
I found something even better than disc replay.
I can't even imagine.
The library has a sale where they sell, like, when new movies come in, they have a bunch of them, that people can rent. So after they become a little less popular, they sell them. So I went to this place, and I bought horror movies for $2 each.
Wow.
And it's, like, fantastic new horror movies. I was so excited. I went maybe a little overboard. Let me tell you everything that I got.
Okay.
I bought the newest Annabelle. Annabelle Comes Home. Yes.
I have not.
I liked it.
Okay, I'll watch it.
So I bought Annabelle Comes Home, Annabelle Creation.
Good.
Assassination Nation.
Never saw that one.
It's pretty good.
Okay.
The Belko Experiment.
Huh.
Crawl.
Never heard of that.
It's like a creature feature alligator movie that came out last year. Okay. I haven't seen it, but it was $2. So I figured even if it's not good, like, it's $2.
Right. Resale value.
Yeah. Doctor Sleep.
That was
47 Meters Down. 47 Meters Down 2.
Of course.
It Chapter 2.
Delicious.
I bought Nocturnal Animals.
That one sounds familiar. Did we watch that?
Yeah, it's the one with Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal, where, like...
We didn't understand what was going on for most of it. Yep.
Yeah, but I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I bought Ready or Not. I bought Sinister 2 and The Strangers Pray at Night.
Those are some bops.
Yeah, and all of them were pretty recent.
Yeah, I mean, within the last couple of years.
Yeah, a few of them I bought for $1. Most of them were $2.
Nice.
So I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. I got 13 movies.
Wow. We don't have disc replays here, which is kind of really upsetting. But we do have something called Second and Charles, which I kind of am obsessed with. But mm-hmm. It's more used bookstore than used movies.
Yeah.
But they do have a movie section. They're not as cheap, though, as disc replay. But then again, we're in Colorado. What is cheap?
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, it just, like, really boosted my day that I got so many nice horror movies.
Yeah. You should let everyone know about your newest addition to the family.
Oh, yeah. I also got a new cat.
Sorry.
A new kitty.
What's her name?
Her name is Nora.
Cute.
Nora Mayhem Kramer.
Can you just, like, say all of three cats or four cats now, full names?
Yeah. So the first one is Pearl Josephine. And then Fern.
Finish Beatrice. The rest of the name.
Pearl Josephine Taquito. and then Pearl. So Pearl Josephine Taquito, Fern Beatrice, Georgia Sienna, and Nora Mayhem.
I'm going to be honest. There's, like, a weird mixture of you sound like you're Southern, but then you also just sound crazy. But it's not, like, it's a pretty fluid mix.
Yeah.
My sweet, sweet summer child, his name is Jackson Gary Biscuit Fisher.
Yeah.
So, he is a beauty. He is curled up asleep on the couch next to me right now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a full house, and, you know, it's kind of hard introducing all the creatures, but...
But you're up for the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's doing pretty well, so...
Well, that's good. Jackson is not accepting of others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He does not like introductions. He was really great with Pearl and Fern, because when Rachel and I lived together, she didn't have the four. She just had the two. And he loved them.
Well, I only had one, and then...
Then we got Fern.
I got a second one.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. We got Fern. Fern was our child.
Yeah, and then you abandoned her.
Yeah, and now she doesn't even recognize me.
She's like, who dat?
I raised her.
Who dat?
Yeah, so Jackson was really good with them. He sucks with any introductions now. He also really hates black cats. I don't know why, but every black cat he has ever met, he has tried to attack.
Jackson.
Yeah, so sorry, Sam and Taylor. That's his bad. But yeah, so fun addition to the family. Enjoying your movies.
Mm-hmm. Also, we are recording on Friday the 13th.
Yay!
Yay!
I definitely watched a Friday the 13th the other day.
I probably should have to, like, get into the mood, but nah.
I'm gonna be honest. Sorry, I'm a little beautiful. Coffee. So, if I start coughing, just try not to talk so you can cut it out.
It's okay.
Yeah, so I didn't realize it was Friday the 13th until this morning. I think it was an email or something that was like, Friday the 13th sale at Wicked Clothing. And I'm like, oh, that sounds nice. So I learned because people try to sell me things and they get me.
Yeah.
So congrats.
I have been very, very tempted by buying stuff online.
Yeah, I've been trying not to.
I keep having to tell myself no.
Yeah.
Do I actually need it?
I definitely bought blue hair dye the other day.
Are you going to dye it again?
So I tried. So, okay. I don't want to bleach my hair. And so Overtone, which is what I used when I had silver hair, it has this like specific dye meant for brown hair so you don't bleach. And I was like, dope, I'm on board. So I bought it. It came yesterday. And so I tried to, like, not start near my roots. Probably start, like, 6 inches down. And I put it in. It said leave it on for 10 to 15 minutes. I was like, no hair dye has ever worked that quick. So I left it on for 40 minutes. And then I got in the shower. I used a color depositing conditioner as well, which stained the shit out of my hands through gloves. And nice. Yet, my hair took none of the color.
Well, that happened last time, too, right?
Yeah, I think last time you and I tried to dye my hair blue, it just turned black.
Yeah, it was pretty blue, like, when we had the dye in, too.
Right, like, this dye, like, my hair looked, like, more denim-y kind of with it on. And I was like, oh, this is going to be lit. All the pictures and blogs of people talking about this hair dye were like, yeah, it works. And their hair was darker than mine at the start. So I'm like, oh, so my hair should take the color just fine. It took none of it. So I'm going to let my hair get dirty the next couple of days and then try again.
Yeah.
I think maybe it was too clean.
I keep thinking I want to dye my hair, but then I just know I'm not going to keep up with the
That's why that I was takes. Going to do the overtone, and I was going to do it where it starts down a little bit and doesn't start at my roots. That way, like, it can ombre into blue, and if I use the conditioner, I don't have to dye it as frequently. Mm-hmm. And plus, like, you don't go, oh, my roots are growing in. That looks ridiculous. Like, my roots are already permanently in. You feel?
Yeah. It's also been over a year since I've gotten a haircut.
I got my haircut, like, real soon after COVID started.
Yeah.
But actually, maybe not. It was like May. Because I cut it all off after doing a training. So.
I think the last time I got my haircut was June of last year.
Yeah. I mean, remember when we used to go to that lady in Brookfield?
Mm-hmm. I liked her.
She just really wanted to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, we're not that interesting. So, joke's on her. But, yeah, so fun talk. I'm going to try again on dyeing my hair, and we'll see. Heads up, Mom, I'm dyeing my hair blue. Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. Lauren, is going to try to help me do it this time, because I did it myself, and I'm like, mm-hmm. maybe I just suck.
That's hard to dye your hair by yourself.
I mean, I'm almost kind of happy it didn't stick, because let's be honest, like, my mirror, we have a mirror in our bathroom, and it's a full length of a wall, but there's no way to, like, look behind me. Yeah. And so I'm like, it's probably super uneven in the back.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have Lauren help me sometime this week. I think we said tomorrow, but I don't know if tomorrow's actually in the cards. Well,
well, good luck with that.
Thanks. I have to get up at 3 a.m. and I don't get off work until 8 p.m. So I'm like, I'm not sure I'm going to be up for dyeing my hair.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, shall we hop on into this?
Yes.
Would you like to go first?
I sure can.
Would you like to tell everyone what we're talking about?
I can. So today we decided to talk about cold cases, which means cases that have never been solved and are no real leads. Which cold cases are things that always get me. Like, I always want the resolution and conclusion, you know?
Yeah, I feel like whenever you have a cold case on your hands, you're instantly like, all right, let's solve this shit because I can't handle the indecisiveness.
Yeah.
But also, like, I don't know if I could ever be Michelle McNamara level.
No, I just want to have answers, you know, right. Like, readily available to me.
I would like them provided without me doing any work.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm on board.
Which is why I think cold cases are really interesting, but I just want to know.
Yeah. The curiosity factor really gets you.
Yeah. Sadly, there are a lot of cold cases to choose from. Did you notice that too when you were trying to pick your story?
Yeah, there's a ton of cold cases, but I tried to find one that at least had like a good amount of evidence. I feel like mm-hmm. a large amount of the cold cases literally have nothing to go on.
Yeah, which is how mine is, kind of.
Yeah, mine. Okay, we're going to go for a ride on mine.
I think I just literally typed into Google, like, cold cases.
Shame.
And I think I got mine off a list of maybe Ranker. Maybe.
Perhaps.
So I picked my story solely off the name. I feel like I had briefly heard the name before, but I hadn't heard anything about the case. And I picked it. And once I started researching it, it was not what I was expecting, but I was kind of too deep into it to
really go back. Yeah, I'm on board.
Have you had that before?
Sorry. Yeah, sometimes with research when we're doing this, I'm like, oh, this is a lot less interesting than what I thought it was, but in no way, shape, or form am I going to restart.
But you're like, I'm in too deep now.
I'm like, we're in this for the long haul. It is a commitment at this point.
Yeah. Not that I didn't like the story or I didn't think it was interesting. It just wasn't what I was expecting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I chose the Atlas Vampire.
Ooh. Sounds spooky.
Which I'd heard that name before. I feel like I'd heard it in top creepiest cases or something. Like probably some dumb BuzzFeed article or something.
Right. We live and die by the BuzzFeed.
Yeah. So I had heard of it before, so that's one of the reasons I picked it. The Atlas Vampire was an unknown assailant who committed the unsolved vampire murder in Stockholm, Sweden in 1932. So this is an older case.
An oldie but a goodie.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of older cases are cold cases just because they didn't have the technology and things that we have now.
Yeah, they didn't have like any forensics until the 90s.
Yeah. I firmly believe if this case happened now, it would have been solved pretty quickly. But this kind of instantly became a national sensation in Sweden once it happened. On May 4th, 1932, Stockholm police discovered the body of 32-year-old sex worker Lily Lindstrom. Oh, also, There's some Swedish words in here I'm 100% sure I'm going to pronounce wrong.
Why did you not learn Swedish in preparation for this episode?
I should have. What am I doing?
I mean, honestly, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah. So, Lindstrom was a call girl, but it was kind of different than normal. Her clients contacted her to arrange services, and they came to her apartment rather than her trying to find men on the streets.
I mean, that's like the difference between like a prostitute and a call girl, isn't it? Or like a hooker. I thought like a call girl was someone that you literally like contacted, you like called them up.
I don't know.
Okay.
But in my mind, if her clients are coming to her apartment, there's kind of some level of trust there.
God, or she just gave no shit.
Hopefully. I don't know. I wouldn't like having strange people come into my house.
Now, if I were a call girl, I agree.
Yeah. And Lily lived in the Atlas neighborhood of Stockholm, which today is known as the Basistan neighborhoods.
Of course.
Her killer became known as the Atlas Vampire. The scene was pretty brutal. She was the victim of blunt force trauma to the head. And the fatal wound was on the right side of her head, and it extended from her temple to her neck. So, like, that was a pretty big wound.
Yeah, no, that was a bludgeoning.
Yeah. They thought that the weapon was probably some kind of round, heavy object, something like a pipe, maybe. And I think one of the main reasons they thought it was a vampire was they found saliva on her neck and body, so they didn't know whether the person was kind of licking and biting her neck.
Can I ask a serious question, and please don't be offended if you're Swedish? Did they believe in vampires?
I'm not Swedish.
I don't mean you, I just meant in general.
Yeah.
Did they believe in vampires?
I feel like vampires are a very widespread mythology.
I agree. I'm just saying, like, in the 1930s, was that still, like, a... maybe.
I don't know. Let me look up, when did Dracula come out?
I mean, the book came out many moons ago.
The book came out in 1897.
So only, like, 40 years-ish.
Yeah. And I know the myths of vampires and stuff were before Dracula, but I'm just saying that's, I feel like, kind of what brought it into super mainstream, you know?
Yeah, like demons were known, but like The Exorcist really just slapped you in the face with them.
Yeah, people are gonna think I'm so ignorant. Like, there were vampires before Dracula.
I mean, me asking, like, were the Swedish under a rock and thought vampires existed?
I'm sure they thought vampires existed. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's like saying, like, did the United States even believe in vampires before Twilight came out?
I mean, let's be honest, we have not stopped believing about vampires in all of our history.
Yeah. Twilight just brought it back.
Twilight made them hot.
They weren't that hot, though.
No, but I'm saying, I feel like vampires really before Twilight, maybe in, like, some smutty romance novels, they were a, like, sex icon. But, like, mm-hmm. at least for our generation, I wasn't super into vampires until Twilight.
No. Did True Blood come out after Twilight? Or was it before?
I don't know, but Twilight came out when we were in middle school, and so I would not have been old enough to watch True Blood.
No. Sometimes I still think I'm not old enough to have watched True Blood.
Yeah, I'm not that mature. I remember watching True Blood with my mom in high school.
You watched it with her?
Yeah, Kathy and I bonded.
That must have been some awkward episodes.
You know, oddly enough, not. But also, I was a high schooler, so I was like, huh, they do that.
I watched the first episode with my cousin. And that was kind of weird, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely went and watched 50 Shades of Grey with my mom and Taylor, so...
Oh, yikes.
There are some other middle-aged women there, but my mom and Taylor are most notable.
Oh, you went to the theater to watch
it. We sure did.
Yikes.
I think it was the second one.
I think you made me watch the first two of those.
Probably because I haven't seen the others.
They're really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Really bad.
But also, let's just take a moment and be like, damn, is that guy foxy?
He's not even really that foxy.
First off, bite your tongue. He is a snack times like seven. He was in Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, and he was way hotter in that show than he was in 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, I agree, but also he has an accent, and he did not have the accent in 50 Shades of Grey, so he was just starting on, like, a downward slope.
Yeah. I've been rewatching the show Smallville, and I can say with scientific certainty that Tom Welling from Smallville is the hottest man that's ever lived.
More so than Jensen Ackles? Yeah, that's your bet there.
Probably a tie.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody will ever top Alexander Skarsgård for me.
Have you seen Tom Welling?
I watched Smallville when I was younger.
Ugh.
But I honestly don't really remember it.
That's a beautiful man. Do yourself a favor and just give it a goog while I'm talking.
Will do. Would you like to jump back in?
Yeah, so back to my vampire. That was a little tangent.
You're welcome, guys.
So they found saliva on her neck and body. But I think the main thing that really took this story into being out of the ordinary was that when they were looking, they found a gravy ladle that was stained with blood. So they thought that the killer had used the ladle to collect the blood and drink it.
That's a bit of an oof.
Yeah. Another thing that was odd was even though there was this brutal crime scene and she had this huge wound on her head, there was only a small amount of blood found at the scene.
Because he drank it.
They thought that he might have either drank all the blood at the scene or used a container to collect it and take it with him to have later.
I mean, he's being resourceful, but I also don't support it.
Yeah. So the last person to see Lily alive was her downstairs neighbor. And she was a 35-year-old sex worker named Minnie Jansen. Jansen told police that Lily had stopped by her apartment days before the murder to ask for some condoms. And apparently this was quite common. She didn't really think anything of it.
Can you take this part out of the episode? But did they have condoms back
then? Yeah.
Yeah, like, definitely remove that, but, like, I didn't know...
No, I'm leaving that in. No. I'm leaving it in.
When did condoms get invented?
You can Goog that. My computer's gonna be like, bitch.
I'm Googling it, and I'll let you know.
Okay. Great.
Hold on, we're getting an answer. They were invented in 1839 and patented in 1844.
The more you know.
So they were not even 100 years old. Those were like trial and error condoms.
Minnie went to check on Lily the next morning, but found out that she wasn't in. But Minnie just kind of assumed she was out celebrating Walpurgis Night, which is a spring celebration on May 1st, known for its carnival-like atmosphere. So Minnie just kind of thought she was out celebrating. No big deal. But she still hadn't seen Lily over the next couple days, so she got nervous and called the police. And the police went to do a check on her, and when they came into her apartment, they found her body face down on the bed. And she was naked, and her clothes were folded and placed on a chair next to the bed. From the state of her body, they thought that she'd probably been dead for a few days prior to the discovery. And they also theorized that Lily's killer had actually slept with her before murdering her.
At least not after.
Well, hopefully not.
They just didn't tell us that part.
Yeah. So kind of trigger warning for listeners and for you.
I have no triggers.
We are going into some territories.
I'm ready.
So just grab onto your chair and just hold on for a second. When they were examining the body, they found a used condom in Lily's anus. And that's a lot to take in. But from that information, they assumed that he had slept with her before murdering her. Which goes back to my thing, like, they obviously had DNA at this crime scene. If this had taken place now, they would have been able to solve this super fast.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, sex workers are often targets of killers. When I read this case, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Jack the Ripper and his victims, how most of the times they were sex workers.
Yeah.
So naturally, the first thought for investigators was to focus attention on Lily's clients. And in total, 9 men were interviewed by police detectives. The names were never released, and they were all eventually let go.
I'm kind of impressed that back in, like, the early 1900s, they were taking it seriously enough to investigate and actually, mm-hmm. like, care. Because I feel like if this had happened here, they would have just been like, well, oh, well.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I was kind of proud of that, too, that they actually were investigating it. I'm not sure if maybe it might have helped put more investigation into the case, just the brutality of the crime scene.
Yeah, I also think, though, a good amount of other countries, they take more respect towards people that have jobs mm-hmm. like that, whereas like, it's very negatively viewed upon for the most part here.
Mm-hmm. They're the less dead.
Right.
Yeah. But like I said, they didn't think that any of her clients that they interviewed were viable suspects. There was a problem that there were a lot of sex workers in this particular neighborhood of Atlas, and assaults and murders in the area were quite common. There was also kind of the issue of the time period that this was. The crime took place during the Great Depression, and wages had been falling and unemployment was rising. So people were relocating from more rural areas to Stockholm due to high unemployment and low crop yield. Because of this, there were kind of a lot of drifters coming into the area.
I love a good drifter.
So, yeah, so a good drifter. So a lot of the times people didn't really know the people that were in the area. They were just kind of coming in and moving through.
Got it.
All this led to no real serious leads or suspects, and there's really no conclusion that they drew from it. All evidence gathered by detectives can be found at the Swedish Police Museum, and they have a lot of evidence. They have a hair sample, saliva sample, and some old condoms that they have, like, on file.
I'm surprised that nobody has been like, let's reopen this and solve it.
Well, even if they tested DNA, they probably wouldn't have a lot of stuff on file. I guess they could do, like, familial DNA.
Yeah, that's more so.
Like, been, like, solved the Golden State Killer case.
Yeah, so everyone stop taking Ancestry, like, you and me or you and 23 or something. Whatever they're called. I think I added, like, 6 things.
Yeah. So you want them to stop doing the familial DNA?
Hey, I'm just saying, when you take those, the government has your DNA, which they probably already have it from something stupid you've done, but you are just handing it over at that point.
Yeah. One aspect about the killer that stood out was the cleanliness. Like I mentioned, there wasn't a lot of blood at the crime scene, and her clothes were folded on and put on a chair next to her. So they thought that the cleaning up after the crime showed that the killer was super neat and orderly.
Super OCD.
Yeah. And they also thought that the lack of evidence was in fact evidence. There was an idea floating around that maybe a police officer was the killer and they tried to throw off detectives by leaving a super bizarre crime scene. like they purposely put elements in that were weird, like the ladle and everything, just to throw attention off.
I mean, a ladle in a crime scene throws me off, so I get it.
Yeah. It just seems like weird stuff had been thrown in, and they thought that could have been done purposefully.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, if we look at the case with modern eyes, there's a lot of clues. There was saliva on the body. There was semen found in a condom, and they found fingerprints on the soup ladle. But back then, obviously, there was no such thing as DNA testing.
Was this back when they would, like, measure your shoe size with your, like, your head? Do you remember
Yeah,
that?
They were doing all kind of weird shit. During that time, most murders were actually solved with confessions. Obviously not the most effective method.
Yeah, that's weak-willed.
Yeah. This story inspired a person who crafted a creepypasta. The title was called Based on a True Story. And in this creepypasta, Lily has nightmares of a man, and he eventually kills her. During the story, the writer suggests that Lily had met the man before.
Mm-hmm.
And in real life, it was possible. She knew her killer, obviously, if the person was in her apartment and they had slept together. And because it's quite an infamous scene with a lot of violence, it's very possible that the ghosts remain in the area. In 2012, a woman named Gloria Anderson penned a blog post about her experience living in the same building Lily was murdered. After watching a crime show, she began researching the murder, and she found out Lily had lived and died in the same apartment building that she was living in. She was also one of the first people to report that Lily had once been married. And she said she'd always felt uncomfortable in the wing of the building where Lily lived.
How could she say that Lily was married? How would she know?
She went full-on research into this lady and found some old records and stuff.
I was going to say, the ghost told me.
I don't think so.
Oh, that's less exciting then.
Yeah. In 2007, a Swedish musician named Erik Malmberg released an instrumental track called In Memory of Lily Lindstrom. And there are a bunch of vampire-like tendencies in serial killers. One of the most famous is Richard Chase, the vampire of Sacramento. There is also a man who was known as the Vampire of Hanover, and his name was Frederick Heinrich Karl Harman. There was a man called Marcelo Costa de Andrade, and he was known as the Vampire of Niterói. And obviously Peter Curtin, the Vampire of Dusseldorf.
Obviously.
And in all these cases, the crimes were pretty brutal, and there was an obsession with blood. The bloodlust of these men is known as clinical vampirism or Renfield syndrome. And this disorder received notoriety in 1992 after the publication of a book by Richard Knoll. And it was called Vampires, Werewolves, and Demon: 20th Century Reports in Psychiatric Literature. As Knoll was writing this book, the clinical psychologist realized that patients with clinical vampirism acted in ways similar to R.M. Renfield, who was a character in Dracula. And that is what I have for the Atlas Vampire.
That was interesting.
They have quite a bit of information, but no answers.
Well, you could solve
that. Do I think it'll be solved?
I want you to solve it.
Oh, let's go to Stockholm.
Absolutely, in a heartbeat.
Yeah, maybe when all this clears up.
That can be our first trip. We'll go to Stockholm and then back to Finland.
We'll go to Stockholm and demand evidence
like,
from
sir,
the museum.
Where is this freaking DNA? I'm gonna settle this once and for all.
Let's just get the DNA and send it to Paul Holes. He'll figure it out.
He's got this.
If anyone has got it, it's Paul Holes.
I mean, you're not wrong, so. Wow.
Who is also Foxy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I personally think it's one of her clients.
I mean, I think that makes the most sense. Yeah. That or it's a priest.
I did think it was interesting the angle that it was someone who was involved with police who knew ways to purposefully throw off a crime scene.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, though, at this point in time, there's no DNA. There's very little forensics. Mm-hmm. If nobody saw somebody specifically coming and going from the scene and he didn't leave anything like, you know, an ID behind.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how they would have solved it.
Or it just could have been a weird dude.
It's a drifter. It's always a drifter.
Or it could have actually been a vampire.
I mean, the drifter was a vampire. Drifter vampires.
Oh, perfect.
Yep. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. Because you don't want to be seen aging or lack thereof. Perfect. So all vampires are drifters.
Yeah.
That's my professional opinion.
Yeah. So that is my cold case.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which I think is destined to always be a cold case.
I think, unfortunately, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to shuffle, so sorry for the noise.
Okay.
I just sunk down very far and aggressive into my couch.
It's okay.
I don't know why I've been coughing. I feel perfectly fine, but I've been doing, like, the bronchitis coughs, and I'm like, God damn it.
That dry air.
It's dry here. Also, it's, like, starting to get cold. So I think it's a combination. And then at work, I'm around a lot of, like, lavender-scented things, so I think everything's just piling on together.
Yeah.
But are you ready for mine?
I am. I love a good cold case. Let's hear it.
Okay. So, spoiler alert, mine is no longer a cold case.
Good.
When we decided to do this research, it was listed as a cold case, and then I got to, like, the very end of researching, and it turns out was solved. It was solved almost 20 years later, but it was solved. So okay.
It was a little chilly before it had been solved.
It was definitely, like, lukewarm at best. So,
yeah.
Let me know if you can hear Jax, because he just threw himself on my lap.
Okay.
But, yeah, so I chose the Sherry Rasmussen murder. Have you heard of this?
I actually just read a very good true crime nonfiction book, and it was maybe 5 or 6 true crime articles by the same author that had been put into a book, and one of the stories was this story.
Okay, well, we're gonna go on the assumption you've never heard it. So
it was very good. I recommend it. It's called The Case of the Vanishing Blonde.
Wow, that's impactful.
It was a quick read.
So we're gonna go ahead and dive into this shit. We're going to start with the background, and it's going to sound weird because I'm going to talk about two people that are not Sherry, but I promise Sherry comes into the picture, okay?
I trust you.
Do not lay on the laptop. This is not a laptop, but don't lay on it. Okay. So, stop. Sorry, he keeps grabbing for my headphones.
He's okay.
He's doing his best. We're going to set the scene with our homeboy, John Rutan. Halfway through my notes, for whatever reason, I started calling him Rooter. But I'm pretty sure his last name is Rutan. So
that's okay.
He later in life marries Sherry, but okay. We are in the 70s. He went to UCLA for undergrad from 1978 to 1982. While there, he occasionally dated one Stephanie Lazarus. They were both athletes, shared a lot in common, blah, 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 not important. So, Lazarus was a bit of a psycho. I don't mean that. Yeah, I don't mean that in a clinical sense. I mean that in, like, a really clingy, overly needy girlfriend, but not girlfriend. So, she would steal Rutan's clothes when he showered and take
what the heck?
Yeah, and she would take nudies of him while he slept. So we're in the 70s, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're not phone cameras. So she got out a legit ass camera and was taking pictures of him asleep.
I like to think of just a Polaroid.
Oh my god, if it's not a Polaroid, I'm upset.
Ew, can you imagine though if it's just like a a disposable camera, the person that has to develop those films.
I hope to God that she learned how to develop her own film.
Like, just drop her off at CVS and the poor, poor worker just has to be like,
That's when they call the police and they're like, hey, so it's not technically child porn, but, like, WTF.
Something's going
this
on.
This man's always asleep. yeah, so she was a bit of a nutcase. Rutan did not view the relationship as more than a booty call. So, for whatever reason, they, like, hooked up, but they didn't have, like, actual intercourse for the until the after he graduated. So they had sex for the first time after he graduated.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm like, what did you do? Because you were hooking up, but not going all the way. But all right. So he ended up getting a job after graduation at Micropolis, and she got into the LAPD Police Academy in 1983. So
I'm glad she is going to be in charge of arresting people.
Oh, she gets some notoriety in her work. So it is upsetting. But anyway, they kind of go their separate ways. Rutan later meets Sherry. She was a graduate of Loma Linda University. She was fast-tracked in critical nursing, and she entered college at the age of 16, and by her late 20s was the director of nursing at Glendale Adventist Medical Center. So she was quite smart.
Yeah.
On Rutan's 25th birthday, Lazarus threw him a surprise birthday party and was unaware that he was in a relationship or that he had even been seeing other women. She Yikes. Thought they were exclusive.
She thought they were dating?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's got to be uncomfy.
So Lazarus was devastated. She wrote to Rutan's mom in 1985 saying that she loved John and the past year has torn her up and that she wished it didn't end the way it did and would never understand his decision. So
this mom is like, I don't want to hear this.
This mom is like, who is this woman? I've never heard of her.
She probably had it.
Yeah, so super awkward. Lazarus wrote in her personal journal that she didn't feel like working and that she found out Rutan was getting married. And so she was depressed and went to his condo.
To Sherry?
Yeah, he was getting married to Sherry. Sorry. I thought you were saying she wrote to Sherry. And I'm like, no, this is in a journal.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, he's getting married to Sherry. So,
yeah.
Being super upset, she basically goes to confront him and they end up having sex. Rutan's,
and he's still exclusive with Sherry at this point.
I mean, yeah, they're engaged, they live together. Rutan said that it was to give Lazarus closure.
Oh, that's
so generous.
If you're with a crazy woman, don't do anything to encourage
her. You're just adding like, oh yeah, this is legit, like we're definitely meant to be together.
I mean, that's confusing to anyone, let alone someone that already has some attachment issues.
Well, also, let's point out the obvious, like, you're freaking engaged. This is not, a very good thing to do to Sherry. But
poor Sherry.
During Rutan, see, I told you I switched his name, like, halfway. During Rutan and Sherry's engagement, Lazarus would not give up. She would bring her skis to their home and would ask him to wax them. Sherry was like, no, this is weird. Like, don't do that. But Rutan was like, oh, it's fine. It's nothing weird. Like, our relationship's over. And he said yes. So after Lazarus left, Sherry confronted Rutan and was like, if the relationship is truly over. And he said, yeah, it is. And he convinced her they were just friends.
Okay. After sleeping with her.
Yep. A few days later. Lazarus returned to pick up the skis after Rutan had left and was fully in uniform and armed. So Rasmussen was super unnerved by the visit and pleaded with Rutan to make them stop and was like, I'm uncomfortable. This can't keep happening. I don't feel safe.
Okay.
Rutan basically told her it was all in her head and to ignore Lazarus. So that is how engagements get
broken off.
This
dude seems like he is just playing both sides of the fence.
I mean, I think he's keeping his options open, you know, eating his cake and I forget the rest of that saying.
His cake and eating it too.
I was going Unabomber.
That's one of my favorite, like, weird facts of all time, that's how they caught the Unabomber.
Yeah.
He was having his cake and eating it too.
He was eating his cake and having it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said it backwards. Whatever the saying is, he did it backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Rasmussen kind of bypassed Rutan and went to her dad and was like, Lazarus is visiting me at work. I feel super uncomfortable. Lazarus keeps saying that things are not over, and if she could not have him, then no one else could.
That's a great, great thing to think.
Right. So at this point, it's almost like it's going to be like a double murder-suicide in my mind, but that is not how the tides turn. Shortly before Sherry's death, she told her dad that she thought Lazarus had been stalking her on the street.
Good.
In 1985, so the same year all this is going down, Sherry and Rutan were married. And now we get to the case. So in February 24th, 1986, in the morning, Rutan left their condo in Van Nuys to go to work. Rasmussen was scheduled to go give a motivational speech at work, but she told Rutan she may call in sick to avoid it because she did not think it was effective motivation strategy. At 9:45 a.m., a neighbor noticed that Rutan's garage was open, but no car was visible. And approximately 15 minutes later, Rutan made the first of several unanswered calls home. Rasmussen's sister also called and was not answered, so it wasn't like a she's ignoring him specifically kind of thing. Like, nobody was getting through.
Yeah.
Around noon, two men, believed to be gardeners, gave the neighbor and her husband a purse they found, which, after invading privacy, they found out it was Sherry's. Around 12:30, a nurse heard what sounded like two people fighting and then something hitting the ground. So,
okay.
One would think you'd investigate, but who am I?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Rutan returned home that evening. It was to an open garage with broken glass on the driveway. And the BMW that he bought Sherry was missing. He found it strange that she would leave without telling him, but also, like, you left the garage open. Different things.
Yeah.
Inside, he found Rasmussen's body on the living room floor. She had been shot three times, and there were signs of a very obvious struggle. So there was a vase that appeared to have been broken over Sherry's head prior to the shooting, bloody handprint next to the burglar's alarm panic button, a toppled credenza, because everyone has a credenza.
Credenza.
It also appeared that someone tried to bind Sherry at one point. She had defensive wounds and a bruise on her face, and the gun had been fired through a quilted blanket. And then the real kicker, there was also a bite mark on Sherry's arm, which they did take a swab from, but she had been bitten. Now we're going to get into the investigation. So LAPD investigated quickly and concluded that Sherry had been surprised and killed by a burglar. Her attire, which was that of a bathrobe, nightgown, and unders, suggested that she was not expecting company. And if she was, it was probably of the not good type. The maid that reported screaming and fighting, which I said nurse earlier, and now I'm saying maid, so uncertain. the one that reported the screaming and the fighting did not recall gunshots, but she also had just assumed that it was a domestic dispute and did not call the police in general.
Oh, good. Right.
So, in my mind, that means she heard a man and a woman screaming, but we shall find out. Mm-hmm. It appeared the homie that broke in was in the process of stealing electronics when Sherry interrupted them. And as a result, jewelry was left behind and the car was stolen as a getaway instead. The BMW they found abandoned a week later, and it yielded no new evidence. The only thing that appeared to be taken was the marriage license.
Odd,
yes.
Odd.
The lead detective, Lyle Mayer, quickly ruled out Rutan as a suspect because, you know, he actually had an alibi, potentially. Rutan ended up quitting his job and actually moved away from L.A. shortly after the murder. Sherry's parents told Mayer about Lazarus, and he made a note of it in the file. Regardless, the police remained convinced that it was a burglary gone wrong. To support the theory of a burglary, there were other burglaries reported later in the same area. Mm-hmm. One out of two reported suspects that they basically said they had a 38 caliber gun on them, which was the same type of gun that was used on Sherry.
Okay.
The only thing that was kind of iffy was the bite mark found on Sherry. Women are more likely to bite during a struggle, whereas majority of robbers are men. So
yes,
there have been instances of men biting during a struggle. So they were basically like, yeah, it's uncommon, but also it's the simplest explanation. So we're going to go that route.
Yeah.
So this kind of turned into a cold case. The burglars remained at large despite a follow-up newspaper story and a reward offered by the Rasmussen family. Sherry's dad, a year later, wrote to the LAPD chief telling him to look into Lazarus again. The chief responded that he watched too much TV.
Okay.
Yep. The blanket used to muffle a point-blank chest shot led some to believe it was intentional, not a result of a burglary gone wrong, because they had the, like, planning and the ability to basically muffle the shot. They silenced it, essentially. So they obviously had to have thought through this, like, yeah, I'm going to kill them. It's not a, oh, they snuck up on me and I shot them. Like, no, like, they came into it hot.
Yeah.
So in 1993, so 5-7 years later, Sherry's dad offered to pay for DNA testing now that it was available and was told there had to be a suspect first.
Oh, that also has to be super expensive.
Yeah, but he was like, nah, bro, I'll do it. So
yeah.
In 1989, which we're going to back up a couple of years, Lazarus was briefly reunited with Rutan. During all of this, Lazarus continued working for the LAPD, and she opened her own PI firm, Unique Investigations.
Oh.
Yeah. So back in 93, she became a detective. 3 years later, she married a fellow officer, and they adopted a daughter together. She became an instructor of the police academy. Rutan also remarried eventually. I don't really have any details on his new wife. She's irrelevant in this. In the late 1990s, LAPD formed a new unit to look through forensic evidence of cold cases to determine if any new leads could be found through the invention of DNA testing. Sherry's case was put into a potential pile. However, it wasn't until 2004 that a criminologist, Jennifer Francis, was able to analyze it. Some of the DNA evidence collected was missing after having been collected by another detective in 93. So Francis found no matches in any of the combined DNA index system, but did find that the saliva from the bite was female. So this undermined the burglary theory. Francis reviewed the case file and discovered a note about a third-party female, Lazarus, that had harassed the victim at work and home. Francis asked if the woman had ever been investigated, to which her supervisor stated, oh, you mean the LAPD detective? And he told her it was a former girlfriend and was not a part of this. And no other detective would agree to review the case, so it went back into cold case files. So now we're in 2009 and a second investigation begins. LA crime levels declined, so detectives started to look into cold cases to increase their clearance rates. And Van Noy's, Jim, I think it's Nuttall, I don't know.
Okay.
And Pete Burba reviewed Rasmussen's file and found interesting enough to, like, kind of look into it. Because the DNA suggested a female, they completely threw out the idea that it was a burglary. They found evidence to suggest the burglary was staged anyway after Sherry had already been killed. So they developed a list of 5 females. Once again, no one communicated, so when Nuttall spoke to Rutan, he was shook to find out that Lazarus was a detective for the Criminal Crimes Division. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, I worded that, and then I thought about it, and I was like, was that clear? she gained notoriety for her job. Investigations ruled out the other women. So all 4 were ruled out, and so then we're down to just Lazarus. Because she is such a notorious, like, detective, they were like, all right, we got to do this on the hush hush. And they started doing it after hours and behind closed doors. They ended up discovering that in the mid-1980s, many officers preferred a 38 caliber as their backup or off-duty gun. And they were required to use plus P ammo, which is what was in the bullets that killed, or what was the type of bullet that killed her. Lazarus had owned a 38 Smith & Wesson Model 49 and had reported it stolen to the Santa Monica police 13 days after the murder, but not to her own department's armory. Armorer? So, that's not shady at all. This led to the assumption that she threw it into the Pacific Ocean off of a popular pier. And then without the weapon, DNA had to do all the work. There was no way to, like, gather more evidence, really. Records showed that Lazarus had been off duty the day of the murder. Realizing Lazarus was now the prime suspect, the investigators brought it to the attention of their supervisors and requested to discreetly collect a voluntarily discarded DNA sample. So they basically had to follow her around, and when she threw something away or left something behind or whatever, they would go pick it up.
I love it when they do that.
Yeah, like the piece of pizza. Mm-hmm. So they had to do this without getting a warrant, because if they had gotten a warrant, they probably would have raised flags and gotten back to Lazarus. So while off duty, she was just, you know, running errands, and she ended up throwing away a cup. And so they scurried and got the cup, and a sample was taken from it. The DNA on the cup matched the DNA found in Sherry's bite. We are all shocked. Stunned, even.
Who could have predicted?
I was completely blindsided. So we're getting to the arrest now. The case was handed off to the robbery homicide division. The arrest planned carefully. On the day of the arrest in June 2009, dozens of officers arose before dawn. The robbery homicide division officers were chosen for their lack of connection to Lazarus, and they called her from lockup at the department headquarters. That location was chosen because Lazarus would have to surrender her gun to enter it, so she wouldn't have a weapon. I mean, I guess she would technically have, like, her weapon lighter, her stick baton thing, but whatever. The lure was that someone in custody wanted to talk to her about an art theft, so when she had checked her gun in and entered the investigation room, they told her it was really about loose ends they were trying to tie up in the Rasmussen case. They said they were being sneaky, so she did not become officer gossip, so they had kind of tricked her into coming there so that people didn't get wind of it. So Rasmussen claimed to not remember much to do with the time, but acknowledged that her visits to the Rutan condo and an encounter at Sherry's work. She then figured out that they were low-key accusing her, and when they requested a DNA sample to eliminate her as a suspect, wink, wink, she refused and left the room.
Nice.
Yeah, so she was immediately arrested and charged with murder. After her arrest, teams began searching her home and car, and they found her journals from the mid-80s, where it mentioned her love of Rutan, her despondency over the engagement, and no mention of her gun being stolen. Her computer history showed she had searched for Rutan's name on several occasions in the late 1990s. So after she had already been married, she was still psychotic. Fellow LAPD officers were shook the cases was working on had been dropped. Sorry, that didn't make sense. So
I was waiting.
Sorry, this is tired me notes. So basically, everybody that she had worked with were really shocked that she was capable of this. And all of the cases that she was working on had to be dropped because she was, you know, being charged with murder.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, but it also sucks.
Right. So after her arrest, she was allowed to retire early from the LAPD, which that's a little too nice, and was held in jail. A bail hearing was not held for almost 6 months. Judge Robert J. Perry set bail to $10 million, and it was $10 million cash, well above what the defense attorney or the prosecutors even asked.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. Lazarus's lawyer tried to have the case dismissed since an initial investigation did not tell her she was a suspect, and the degradation of the quality of evidence after 23 years of not being solved. Judge Perry didn't give a shit and let the case proceed. Judge Perry is kind of like the original pimp in my mind. Like, he had no chill. He was like, nah, you a flight risk, $10 million bail. Nope, we're not going to dismiss it. I don't give a shit. Like, he just laid down the law. Defense attorneys then tried to quash the evidence found in the warrant, the judge almost gave in, but decided the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule applied, and all evidence obtained could be admitted. So they tried to get thrown out the voluntary discarded DNA sample.
Yeah.
We're moving on to the trial. It gained considerable media attention, which I'm sure you are shocked. The trial began in the early 2012 in LA County Superior Court. They decided the motive was obviously jealousy, which how could it be? Rutan testified and said having sex with Lazarus while engaged was indeed a mistake. All right, bud.
Understatement.
Yeah. Lazarus's attorney tried his darndest to get the DNA evidence thrown out since the whole case was riding on it. The jury consisted of 8 women and 4 men, so those were not great odds.
Yeah.
In March, after several days of deliberation, Lazarus was convicted of first-degree murder at the age of 52. She was sentenced to 27 years to life in prison, and she will be eligible for release in 2034. So, that's coming up. I mean, it's basically, like, around the corner, you know?
Yeah.
So, that was the not-so-cold case anymore of Sherry Lazarus. Or Sherry Rasmussen.
Close.
Yeah. I just, you know, married the two women.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting case, though.
I think it's super interesting, and it just is absolutely flummoxing how nobody was like, yeah, Lazarus is a suspect. They're all like, no, it had to have been a man. And it's like, no, we can be crazy, too.
Well, a lot of people's first thought is not, like, that a killer is a woman.
I mean, statistically, it's less common, but also every single sign pointed to her.
Yeah.
So, like, it's kind of idiotic that they were like, it just has to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope you enjoyed it.
Was I as good as the book? You were more in-depth than the book was, honestly.
Suck it.
It was mostly just kind of Stephanie's interview with police.
You know, I just kind of, like, glazed over the interview. I didn't actually, like, listen to it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love that she's, like, at the time of the actual investigation, she didn't recall ever having anything to do with, like, Sherry's work or, you know, coming to their home and harassing her.
Yeah.
And then the other one was literally like, oh, no, in this interview, she's like, of course I went to her work in her home and harassed her, but I don't remember details.
Yeah. It was kind of a funny interview because you could just tell that she thought, like, they didn't suspect anything, you know?
Right, like, she thought she was okay, and then she goes, oh, wait, you guys are accusing me.
Yeah.
Hold the phone.
Like, it's not, like, until they are almost about to arrest her that she's like, something's up.
You would think that being, like, in law enforcement or a detective in general, like, whether you're a PI or whatever, okay?
Well, she just was so... You would, like,
read the room a little better.
She just was so delusional.
She just thought, like, huh, they haven't solved it for 23 years. Why are they gonna solve it now?
Yeah.
I get that.
Yep. But, cool. Very interesting.
Well, everyone, next week we're gonna talk about mysterious celebrity deaths.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mine is going to be a wild ride.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to tell you about it because it is a side of this actor I did not know existed until this research.
I feel like it's going to be a very long and involved episode.
Yeah. 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 It's going to be something.
We're also going to try to have, like, a little extra episode between then and now.
Yeah. We're going to... You know, Michaela's schedule permitting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have no life.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Jackson says that he would like to watch Scooby-Doo now. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We were watching Scooby-Doo Cyber Chase.
Oh. Yeah. I think I might maybe at least start one of my new movies I got today.
Watch Sinister King. It's a gift.
I'm kind of feeling...
Dr. Sleep.
Maybe Annabelle Comes Home.
Yeah, I need to watch that. I just it's not on any streaming platforms yet, and I don't want to pay.
Yeah. Annabelle, the first one, I hate.
Except for the hot dad.
Yeah, even he can't help it that much, though.
He helped me.
Annabelle Creation was great. Yep. And I would put Annabelle Comes Home, like, almost at the level of Annabelle Creation.
I'll have to watch it.
Yeah.
I've been trying Sorry, go ahead.
I also had a very good theater experience with Annabelle Comes Home. I was the only one in the theater, so it was, like, extra creepy.
You were the only one?
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Okay, well, thank you for listening to this episode.
I hope you like the tangents.
Yeah, we were kind of all over the place, but that's okay.
That's okay. Can you hear Jax?
Yeah.
All right, on that note, have a good night.